Welcome to the August 16th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We have gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your questions in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Amos Asip is here. Hi, Amos.
Hey, good afternoon.
Welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
John T. Myers joining us shortly. From the city of Pier, Jeff Litterick joins us on the phone. Good to hear from you, Jeff.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show. Hope you're feeling better. And joining us from the Black Hills Surgical Studio, Hospital Studio, is Craig Mount in Rapid City. I didn't mean to make it sound like, Craig, you were joining us from the hospital.
No.
But you're from the Surgical Hospital Studio, and we welcome you today. Thanks for being back on the show. It was very entertaining last time.
It is great to be here. Thank you very much for having me. And I love this place. I love this show.
We're going to get into, in the second segment of the show, a topic that you and I have spoke about, and that's called dark patterns. And what most folks probably don't know is dark patterns are a user design or the way a website's designed or an app is designed that's to trick you or to not let you get to where you want to go in a timely fashion, I guess, is a good way to put that. So
dun dun dun,
yeah,
right? Very ominous.
but you know, the more we know, the less frustrating it's going to be, and the easier it's going to get to identify those things and move on. So we're going to get to that in the second segment, though. That's going to be kind of fun. We are a listener interactive program. Folks, if you have a question, we'll try to provide the answer. Our Facebook page is simply facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments or questions there. Please don't be shy. You can send us a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's, of course, 605-956-7372. And our phone number, if you'd like to call the show and speak to us live on the air, is 800-852-0214. That's 800-852-0214. Of course, that email address again, inthemoment@sdpb.org, is probably the fan favorite. Amos, the easiest thing.
Absolutely. That's the easiest way to do it.
Munching on their corn dogs and listening to the show.
Must be at the state fair.
That's coming up.
Yeah.
I don't think it's, it's very soon.
You know, it is right around the corner, isn't it?
Yeah, but probably doing the prep for the corn dogs, getting the corn dog tolerance built up so that you can properly enjoy the experience.
The eaters
up there.
Are, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, boy, any news caught your eye in the last week or so? I've caught some weird stuff. Tesla owner, she went to this body modification place. You know, they have those now. And
her body or the car body?
Her body.
Okay.
Took the RFID out of the card or whatever you have on a Tesla that you wave when you get in the car that activates everything, and implanted that in her arm.
Sure.
So all she needed to do was the wave of her forearm, got the chip close enough to the car that said, "Hey, we know who you are, and we're gonna go down the road now."
I hope she owns that same car for a long time.
Or doesn't mind.
I suppose they probably could find a way to make the RFID chip work with multiple things, a different car at a different point. But I've heard that same thing. I was reading an article online, a guy who did the same thing. He had his implanted just below the palm of his hand. And his also was for access into this case. It was into data centers. And so he no longer had to carry the little card. For us, we use some RFID chips that are embedded in cards, and a lot of us just put it in our wallet,
mm-hmm.
and then you back up to the little reader when you go to the door, and it opens up. Well, it would be similar fashion to just wave your wrist over that and have it open the door for you.
But I chuckle for some of the colloquial words that people use to describe those cards and that process of backing your rear end up to the
shuffling up to the door. Yeah.
Shuffling up to the door.
Yeah.
But I don't know, but this thing is like, it described to me as the size of a small, Lego character. And I don't know how small Lego characters are.
That's seems pretty awful big. Large, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one that I had seen was smaller than a typical aspirin pill or caplet, I guess, because it's kind of longer than it is wide. But we've talked about these sorts of things before, where you start out with technology, utilizing it in a way that seems kind of silly and not too useful, and you kind of have, in these cases, you've got a one-trick pony, right? You can get into a door, or you can get into your car. But, you know, years ago, well, relatively, several years ago, we were talking about things like Alexa, and why would you ever want to talk to an inanimate object and say, tell me a joke that seems silly, and why would you spend money on it? But now we're seeing this is just the precursor, or the beta testing, I guess, for a term, to be able to find out what works, what doesn't, how the technology reacts, where are the things that we need to make things better. And now you've got so many realistic, legitimate voice commands that you can use, either with those home assistants or on other applications, that this is just the beginning, and eventually that will start to bridge out, and you'll start finding other applications for that, and we don't even know what it is yet.
I don't know what that is, but
that was sounds like a doorbell.
The neural network trying to get
somebody
in on the
show. Voice commanded that,
right?
So.
Right.
I thought it was just a news article maybe a week ago or a couple weeks ago about a big company wanting to do some brain implants, some neural network kind of things. Maybe even that was Amazon.
Neuralink, I think that we caught that we didn't get to the end of that at the last show. That was a company, Elon Musk has another company.
Oh, it was a Musk company. Okay.
Yeah, called Neuralink. And essentially the idea is can we connect computer intelligence to our brain? Right, so you can get it to think, to do things, and to essentially have a computer inside your head. I mean, the brain is like the original computer in my mind, yeah. But now it's like forming it with. I mean, this is like sci-fi stuff, but those are the bets that Elon Musk makes.
A pretty just catching a quote here from a renowned philosopher and cognitive psychologist, Susan Schneider, says that this brain chip that Elon Musk would like to do is suicide of the mind. So there are detractors, obviously, to this, but science and technology are kind of going some crazy places nowadays, and we don't always aren't always in control of those, and so there's going to be pros and cons, and we'll see where that shakes out. I don't know if you caught it on the way in, we were talking about an implant of an RFID chip by a lady for her Tesla. She was able to get in the car and wave her arm and then wake her car up. And
which, you know, in that scheme of things, I mean, that's not that new. I mean, I've had body modification type friends who have had subdermal implants, and generally they're not useful for that sort of thing, right? They're just a stainless steel item. That,
those little horns?
Similar
to... Those could be like little Wi-Fi antennas.
They could be.
For 5G.
Yeah, you put those horns in, and if those horns have sort of RFID in them, then boom, you've got two birds, one stone kind of thing.
Whoa. And think of how many pets people have already chipped in case they get lost or stolen. For recovery. I mean, there's very, from my understanding, there's very few pets without the chips embedded in them anymore.
Yeah, Jeff makes a good point. I mean, that putting a chip underneath skin and having it not cause problems is kind of old hat at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think of Apple now says that over 50% of their revenue comes from wearable tech. And so they define wearable tech as, say, Apple Watch and then AirPods. I think they might also, I don't know if they throw like the HomePod, the home stuff in there. You don't wear that, but... Basically, what they're trying to show is that they're not just a phone company anymore. That, you know, they weren't a computer company. We're no longer just a phone company. So 50% of revenue is wearable tech, and I think wearable tech is just the transition, right? So Google Glass didn't work. We're not ready quite to put a computer in our glasses yet. It'll happen. Snapchat's trying
it's
to do it.
It's
got to
happen soon, because isn't the adoption of the big goggles, the 3D stuff, isn't that coming along pretty well?
I mean, I think, you know, AR, VR, slow. I think, that's the point, though, is that it's all like baby steps, right? So, like, we are okay with smart watches now. You'll see a lot of people wearing those. And so then it could go to the goggle or glasses or goggles next. And then, I mean, honestly, not to scare people, but the next step or the eventual step would be a permanent wearable part of your body.
Medically, there's already some coming out for like blood sugar levels, you know, heart rate, stuff like that, where it's long-term embedded for like 6 months to a year at a time underneath your skin, and then it talks to other devices outside through Wi-Fi and Bluetooth to send out the reports and alerts. So it's all coming.
How long have people been using pacemakers? That's been decades,
sure, yeah,
right?
100%.
So yeah, I guess we shouldn't be as disturbed by this
It's not so that we can like tweet, right? Tweet from our wrist. It's much more important use cases. You talk about a pacemaker or imagine, I think when we talk about how many times on the show do we talk about security breaches and data breaches? You know, I think Amos can vouch for this more than I can, but your body, things like your, you know, your retina scan and your fingerprint are probably some of the most secure ways of authenticating things that we have.
Yeah, we talk multi-factor authentication, which would be something, you know, like a password, something you have, like a RFID chip or something your fingerprint. Or retina scan, that sort of stuff.
Though there was an interesting news story this week, security-wise, about that stuff. There's a major company that does biometric physical security for other governments, companies, banking, especially in the UK. A lot of banks use this company to secure all their physical stuff, and it's all biometrics. Well, interesting story, as a security company, they uploaded their 23-gigabyte database of all their username, passwords, unencrypted, and images of the fingerprints, retina scans, face recognition data, all unencrypted and readable to anyone on the internet.
Oh, great.
That's a bad idea.
That was a bad idea.
That intern lost their job.
Now, but yes, it was all up there for anyone to download off the cloud storage. So all the data of all the users of and who had access to what. So
probably really important people on that list, I would imagine, if their retina scans and fingerprints are all in there. Probably very important people to very important places.
So data breaches can actually breach that kind of data, too. It's more uncommon than just a username password being stolen or your credit card information. But in this day and age, with all that data up there, especially facial recognition data, you're going to probably see more and more data breaches on that kind of data, too. So,
well, that's one way to close a segment. kind of a downer, but, you know, you think back to some of the movies we've seen and how they go to lengths to recreate fingerprints and to let them into phones or let them into rooms or palm prints or
it is sometimes funny to me when we get into these type of conversations how accurate most of the sci-fi movies are, right, the timeline's always off. Like, we're supposed to have floating cars by now, which we don't, but usually they usually end up getting the stuff right, maybe just the timeline wrong. And I think it's funny when you look back at, old sci-fi movies where they were doing this type of stuff.
Yeah. You thought it was crazy back then, but it's here before you know it, isn't it?
Here's a little quick news thing that was just released by Google too, on security and users and stuff like that. And Google recent release of Chrome extension for Chrome, in which that if you typed in a username and password to site, it actually checked to see if that password had been breached in some of these billion password breaches. They checked the database to make sure the password hasn't been hacked. And if it has been, it lets you know. And Google released kind of their findings, though they don't see the passwords themselves. It reports to them when you type in a password that's been compromised already, and they're saying hundreds of thousands of people are constantly using passwords that have already been hacked on many different websites and where their hack was at, and people need to stop doing that. So it's a good extension to get. It is a safe extension, and it can give you a heads up to if your password has been knowingly breached and hacked already. Whenever you type it into any other website, and prompts you to change it, hopefully quickly. So, it's kind of amazing in this day and age that it's catching so many people not changing passwords even after they've been hacked.
Can you give us the name of that one more time? Did you?
So it's a Google Chrome extension from Google called Password Checkup.
Okay, Password Checkup. Nice. I'm gonna do that right after the show today. I would do it right now, but I don't have time because we're going to take a break. You are in the moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Kent Osborne. We are talking tech with the computer guys. And after this break, we're going to get into a little bit of dark patterns. And what they are user designs for websites and apps and things that can do things like have some trick questions, or one of my favorites is called the privacy zuckering. I thought that was kind of neat.
New verb.
The Roach Motel. They have very creative names for the types of things that that folks can do to you, and when you realize what they are, you'll be smarter and try to avoid those things. We'll talk about that after this break. And welcome back to In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne, and we are talking tech today. Joining us from Rapid City again is Craig Mount. Craig, you've been at Classy Brain for 4 years now?
That's correct.
And just briefly, give us a little rundown of what Classy Brain is.
Yeah,
a little background, if you would.
Yeah, Classy Brain is a digital marketing company that focuses on turning online web traffic into in-person customers for local business. We do this using local search engine optimization, as well as Facebook ads and Google ads.
Cool. And we spoke before the show, obviously, and talked a little bit about some topics for today. And the one that really struck my interest, you mentioned dark patterns. And tell me why that's important, I guess, to Classy Brain and to you and to your clients and really anybody.
Sure. Yeah. And this is more of a, this is more of like a consumer. This affects all of us as opposed to just like the average local business. But I just found it interesting, it's amazing how, we live in this world, technology, these big tech companies, how unregulated it is. And just, there's a lot of opportunistic strategies out there. And, it's just, again, it just kind of shocks me how, much these online companies in the case of what we're going to talk about, a lot of them are e-commerce companies, will just kind of, ask for forgiveness as opposed to permission. And, for me, I just like talking about it because it just makes people a little more aware. I don't really necessarily think it's going to change anything, but the next time that you're shopping or doing some online shopping and you see that, you kind of say, oh, I recognize that and why they're trying to do that. And, there's some of the things that you mentioned on there that are, sneaking into your shopping cart, right? That people probably want to know about.
The old sneak into the basket.
Which yeah, right.
we've seen that. And you're right. It didn't take me long last night doing a little surfing around the web to spot some of these practices. And there's, what I've seen is there's up to, there's probably some major ones, but there's up to 13 different things that they've identified: misdirection, purposely focusing your attention on one thing to kind of distract you from another. Right. So that's user design again.
Yeah.
Or UX is the term that's used, but user design. Hidden costs. We've all seen that. Extra delivery charges and some unexpected things that end up showing up in there. Had that happen to me yesterday, as a matter of fact. Bait and switch. Confirm shaming. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Confirm shaming would be, you're logging onto a site and it says, hey, you want to sign up for our newsletter? And there's two options. One is, yeah, absolutely. And the other is, no, I want to be misinformed for the rest of my life, or, something like that. They'll try to get you to, no, I'm not cool,
Yeah.
You kind of see that.
One of my favorites is when you go to a website for the first time and they say, give us your email address to save 10%. And then the only other option is to click a link that says, no, I don't like saving money. I'd like to throw all my hard-earned cash away.
Exactly.
Logic. Yeah.
This one I really hate. Disguised ads. So they're disguised as content or navigation. You click on it, and guess what? It's an ad. It's trying to get you to buy something. That's.
Yeah, you see that a lot on mobile apps, right?
Yeah. Yep. A lot on mobile apps. Forced continuity, they call it. So when your free trial ends, And your credit card keeps getting charged, but you can't find a way to turn that thing off.
Yeah. Just
bury that cancel button.
Bury that cancel button.
Yep.
Really popular with publishers, I'd say, you know, newspapers, magazines, right?
Yeah. Friend spam. How often does this happen? They want you to, you know, hey, let's access your contact list and let's tell everybody that you know about this game, this thing, this article. That happens a lot.
Yeah, I fell victim to one of those. It was a blockchain type of tool that I signed up for a year and a half ago or something. And just the way that it was weird because you have to give an email address to sign up with basically anything. So I gave my email address, but there was a subtle checkbox that said that I missed. And it said something about like, keep in touch with us or, you know, and I didn't uncheck it. And everybody in my inbox got an email to sign up for the same service.
Was it like tiny and grayed out, sort of?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm usually pretty good at this stuff. And I think people who, if it's a tech thing, think that if I'm sending them something, that it might actually, that's something they should look into. So I got a lot of responses saying, should I sign up for this? And I'm like, oh, sorry.
So you're why I'm getting those emails.
They got me this time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So even the most,
I don't know about the most, but
knowledgeable,
I think I'm above average
of tech. Yeah, boy. Yeah, Roach Motel, that's you get into a situation very easily, but then you find it hard to get out of it. Or
yeah,
premium subscriptions.
Sign up for the subscription. If you'd like to cancel, send a letter by pigeon to, you know, New York, right? write it in, you know.
And then this is one of my, named after the Facebook CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, privacy zuckering. So you're tricked into publicly sharing information about yourself that you really didn't intend to.
And I think the interesting thing about most of these tactics, if you flip it on the company side, there's a term in kind of the digital marketing world called growth hacking. And essentially it is a growth marketer is someone who uses a combination of marketing plus technology to achieve high growth at scale type of results. And so these type of companies that we're talking about have huge demands, you know, growth. You know, I'd be super pumped if my business grows by 50%. That's not enough. They're talking about 300, 400, 500% growth that they expect. And so the ways that they can do that are through some of these tactics called growth hacking. And so you could, you know, some of these are a little bit more evil than others. But it's interesting to go run through them as on a list. And as a consumer, what Craig's saying is like, yeah, watch out for this, watch out for this. As a marketer on the other side, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Oh, man. Yeah. So these are crutches then. These are shortcuts to gain.
Yeah, shortcuts. Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah, and, you know, I agree that some of them are definitely worse than others. And I just thought it was interesting how prevalent it is nowadays, how we've just kind of accepted it. You know, this study actually that we're referencing, it was done by a couple people at Princeton, and they were analyzing just, I think it was like over 11,000 e-commerce websites, and most of them had instances like of this, right? So, you know, yeah, it is just, it's kind of the world that we live in now. And, you know, we've all kind of, again, we've all experienced this in some capacity, and, you know, it's not something that's probably going to change, but it is interesting to know about for sure, both from, you know, a consumer standpoint and also from a marketer standpoint. I'm sure if there's any small businesses on here listening, they're like, oh, well, I want to add that, right?
This sounds like a good way to...
Right. And, you know, like the one that you mentioned was sneak into the basket, right? That actually happened to me at Best Buy, right? Bought some new AirPods and they auto put that protection plan mm-hmm. in there, right, for me. And, you know, you have to uncheck, no, that's okay, I actually don't need it, you know.
Wow, that's... So we're sort of being trained to be skeptical about marketing practices now. Is that where I'm going with this?
Oh yeah, just aware, right? Just aware that it's kind of going on. And you know, again, it's just, to me, it's so interesting because of how common it is. I mean, this is literally something that a lot of e-commerce websites do nowadays.
Yeah, I think you can always you could have a good healthy debate on the value of marketing and advertising, right? One phrase I like is that marketers ruin everything. a new app or a new technology comes out, our phone, and we think, man, this phone's great. It's you know, I just get to read the content. I don't have to have all these ads and banner ads and pop-ups. And you know, sure enough, that comes along. It might be in a mobile game, and then now there's an ad in the middle of your game. So marketers probably do ruin everything, but at the same time, like good marketing, good advertising that appeals to your emotions, that solves your wants and your needs. You know, at the end of the day, I always like, you know, pretty like animal instincts as human beings. We all, at the end of the day, want more or less the same thing on our Maslow's of hierarchy of needs, and marketing is always trying to promote that to us. And so it's sly, and Craig's right. Just being aware of it is probably the most important thing.
Very interesting. Yeah, I appreciate marketing. I appreciate being marketed to when the information is useful to me.
Yes.
So these are things that, I could use that product in this way, or this is going to benefit me in X, Y, and Z. But, it seems to me, thinking back to the security training of slow down.
Yes.
And think about it a little bit. Pay attention. And that's going to help rather than just do the impulse. Try to make the shopping experience as short as possible because you don't like doing it. You better slow down and make sure those little tick marks or radio buttons or things aren't automatically filled in for you.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, this just happened to me every time I have a laptop. Every time it updates, I feel like Skype just magically pops up every single time I restart my computer. And it's like, I thought I turned that off, you know, it's just like consistently doing it, you know?
And I think what's unfortunate is, like you said, those of us on the show are probably average to above average on our technology awareness and using these tools. And it's still, we still fall victim to this stuff. And so it is unfortunate when you think about maybe, more of a neophyte to some of these tools or some of these technologies who can easily be tricked.
And that knowledge gap is, you know, I guess that's what we're trying to do here is turn people into experienced users or consumers and shore that knowledge gap up a little bit. And we could all be above average in running through some of these scenarios.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, Ken. I mean, we do exist in a world with knowledge gaps. I mean, I know we've talked about this prior, but that just seems to be something that, you know, this knowledge gap seems to increase every day. I mean, there's legislation that's passed that affects, you know, consumers, small business owners. There's terms of service updates, right? And it's just, it's very difficult to, you know, kind of keep on top of all of it.
If you're not in it, doing it every day,
yeah, if you don't live in that world, yeah,
gets rusty, and then maybe who you trust isn't top of mind. That's very interesting. I didn't even think about that. Again, this is a listener interactive program. If you have any questions or comments, our Facebook page is facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments or questions there. Texting us at 605-956-STPB. That's 956-7372. We'll get us a message as well. And easiest thing to do is tap out a quick email to us in the moment at stpb.org as you finish up your lunch today. We would love to hear from you. Craig, was there anything else you wanted to mention? We kind of ran through the list quick of some of those topics. I wasn't sure if I missed anything, or was there any other points you wanted to make?
Yeah, I think that, you know, just in regards to, you know, you're kind of talking a little bit about the knowledge gap, right? And how we kind of like exist in this world now. And that's why I love, shows like this, that we can, you know, communicate these things, because as, you know, myself and John, right, we're constantly doing this every single day, and any opportunities that we get to kind of share this kind of information, it's always really great.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we can mop up any discussions on the dark patterns that are going on.
Matter is a really great fiction book if anyone's looking for a little sci-fi fiction book.
I am, and thank you, and we'll be right back after this. You are back in the moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Ken Osborne. We are talking tech today with the computer guys. Amos is here. John T. Meyer from Lemonly. Craig Mount joins us from Rapid City. And Jeff Litterick in Pier as well. Jeff, I wanted to talk. Did you catch any DEF CON news from last weekend that kind of blew over? But it's becoming very interesting who's starting to show up at DEF CON now.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of interesting. This year was not nearly as busy on the breaking announcements from previous years of new stuff being found out. Maybe a little bit because there was some other news of really breaking stuff on Microsoft front with Patch Tuesday this week and Google releasing some exploits, zero-day exploits they had found in Windows going all the way back to Windows 98 and stuff. So, but yeah, there were a couple of things going on at DEF CON. A lot of it was more collaborative kind of stuff. Kind of interesting on who's showing up and who's working with who. You know, DEF CON and Black Hat, they're the two major security conferences, and they were more us against them in many ways. Black Hat a little bit more than DEF CON in that the hackers were always trying to one-up each other and the good guys. But recently they've become more of a partnership in trying to fix stuff versus just blow stuff up. So
right, yeah. So Black Hat, or excuse me, DEF CON started in 92, and it's the longest running and largest underground kind of hacking conference. And this year we actually had congressmen show up and talk about voting and voting machines and hacking voting machines and things. So it seems to be becoming kind of inclusive.
Yeah, they used to have a contest of spot the Fed because, you know, certain federal agencies, law enforcement agencies would always show up to, you know, get information, find stuff. And they actually had contests on spotting the Fed in the room and stuff like that. It was a very, you know, us versus them type of atmosphere, so to speak. But this year was seemed to be much more about, here's what we're seeing as problems in the future, and here's how to fix them.
Right, so election security was obviously a big thing. That's why the Congress critters were there, and they brought in a big prototype of a voting machine and tried to get people to see if they could hack into it. And I guess they weren't very successful, which is good to know. They were successful on a number of other fronts, DSLR cameras, and you're thinking, how can you hack a camera? But if you bought a camera recently, you'll notice that they have Wi-Fi built in, they have Bluetooth, they have all kinds of different ways of communicating, and boy, if you're doing that, other people can talk to it.
And people are going to have to start thinking a little bit more about this. Anything that is a smart appliance or smart thing has a computer in it, and every computer is hackable. Every computer can have issues, and if it's networked, it's remotely hackable. You don't have to be in the same room. A good example is there's now a smart oven out for $600, and people are reporting issues where at night, in the middle of the night, it turns itself on and preheats itself up to 400 degrees without any warning. And the vendor is blaming people, like, going through the app on their iOS phone, looking at recipes, accidentally turning the oven on and off. This is a smart device. It has a computer. If it has a computer, there will be bugs. It can be hacked. That's just the way it is. It doesn't matter if it's a printer, a camera, you know, a pair of Google Glasses, you know, your watch. Everything that is a computer always has the potential to be hacked, and computers are on just about everything anymore.
So the hack that was probably the most headlined from this year was about using a Netflix account to steal banking information. And the interesting thing about that wasn't if you think about a traditional hack, like somebody sat down at a computer and just like did something that got them into the bank account. It was more, what's the word for it? The human engineering sort of a thing. You called a one company and got a little piece of information. You called another company, got a little piece of information. And if eventually, if you stitched all the things together correctly and got hold of the right people, you could gain access to more and more information. And as it steamrolled, then you could eventually get into bank account information. And I thought that was interesting, that it wasn't just strictly a coding hack. It had to do with human engineering as well.
Yep, social engineering. It's actually been very common for a number of years now. One of the more famous ones happened about 5-6 years ago already, in that a person wanted to steal someone's Twitter handle because they had a famous Twitter handle. So what they did is they actually got a connection into Google Mail, calling them up, got some piece of information that then they used with Amazon to get the last 4 digits of their credit card on their Amazon account, which then they used with Apple because Apple considered that part of their privacy questions, to have Apple give them information that then they could went back to Twitter, and they had enough information to convince Twitter they were who they were and steal the Twitter account. A little bit more, you know, not necessarily benign, but a little bit more innocent than a credit card. But people have been using it a lot because what a lot of people are starting to understand is different companies, for security reasons, have different methods, and some use different information. And sometimes they will give up information, think it's not important, but the next company uses that as your security question so that you can actually get even more information. One of the common things, and this is what I try to avoid if at all possible, they use to kind of bridge this stuff, is your username, which is most people use their email address. So you're using your email address every place, so that's in common. And they can use that to bridge stuff. I've gotten to the point where I use different usernames on every website if I can. Many websites require it to be your email address. But if possible, I do not use the same username anymore, to kind of break that linkage so that they can't always, you know, use that as a common thing that says, well, here's my Gmail account, right? Well, because everyone knows your Gmail account. Anyone can find that fairly quickly. And that's what most people use to set up accounts. So, and then they always ask you the security question. Well, if they ask you what high school you went to, well, that's usually not too hard to find. And then you ask them, well, what's, you know, an instant question. What's the last 4 digits of the credit card I have on file so I can see what credit card I have on file with you? Well, that's not going to give you the credit card information necessarily, but then you take it to someplace else that says, well, the security question is the last 4. Well, you give them the last 4 you got from the other company, and then you ask, well, what's the whole number and expiration date on it? And they just give it up because you answered the security question. It's kind of a real problem for targeted type attacks and stuff. Many famous people are having issues with this, and this is how they get into their phones and steal phone accounts and actually hijack phones. AT&T had a recent thing where people were hijacking phones, and they get some information like this, and then they go and steal your phone numbers to get all your text messages through an AT&T outlet, even protected ones. I mean, this one user complained to AT&T the first time it happened, so they put special protections. The hackers walked into the next door and was able to steal his phone all over again because internally they did it follow their own protections and security rules. So if you're a famous person, you are the target already of these types of attacks. So,
hey, John, you watch out.
Well, I was just going to say, oh, geez. There's hope. There is hope. Like, if you're feeling overwhelmed, and I'm guessing, you know, Jeff can unpack it for us, but when he says he uses a different username for every site, there are tools that help you do that. We've talked about a couple of before. We've talked about LastPass, 1Password, these type of software tools that you can have on your computer or your phone. You have to remember just 1 password, and then they will create a new, unique, usually a long series of letters and numbers, username and password, for each site and tool that you use, so you don't have to remember all these. So if you're listening to that and feeling like, oh my gosh, how, you know, my sticky note on my desk, there's not enough space, don't do that. Use a tool.
Yeah. There's plenty more tools, and many of them are even being built into browsers like Chrome, where it will suggest at least strong passwords and stuff like that. And remember all your usernames and passwords and stuff. There's no way anyone can use a different password, much less a different username on every website, which is what they should be doing, without some automated help. So, yep. lots of solutions out there. You just kind of have to pick the best one for you.
You said a browser or a phone. I have to do browser and phone.
Yeah, of course.
Because I had to, because what I started doing, I started using LastPass as a crutch. And I'd sign up for a new service or something, and it'd say, we need a password that's between 8 and 132 characters. And I go, 132 characters? Challenge accepted. So you dialed LastPass into 132 characters of, you know, upper, lower, special characters. And anything that they would allow me to do, I did. And then all of a sudden, I've got a bunch of passwords. There's no way I could type that in there if I had to. I mean, I can't imagine trying to call my wife and, you know, she says, I need access to this account. Let me give you that 132 character password. There's no way. So it is a bit tricky on certain things, but I just sort of went nuts for a while. And sure. So now I have to have it on my phone because I'm accessing more and more of these websites on my mobily. I'm not using my laptop. I'm not, you know, I used to be pretty dependent on a laptop, and I'm not anymore. As I transition to more mobily, these apps can transition with you and autofill things on your browsers and your phones as well. So thank goodness.
If you're running Android, actually, fairly soon Google is rolling out a new feature to Android where it will kind of do that in the background. So instead of you having to have a third party, at least for Google services, they won't even ask you for the password or automatically keep track of it in the background and just enter it for you on all Google services. And that should be able to be expanded over time to other sites and stuff. So
I
so
love
there
Google.
Is help coming. People are trying to help you be better at security.
I'm looking at the look on Amos's face, and I'm saying, I love Google, but I'm not sure I'm going to give Google all my passwords.
You know, it's and I used to love Google. I'm kind of tending to shy away from them anymore, especially since
really?
They took out that they used to actually have a motto that was "Do no evil" in their actual you know bylaws, that sort of stuff. They actually took that out, which is weird.
They deleted the no, or what?
They deleted the line.
Oh, yeah, they've been caught doing some very sneaky stuff, a lot like what we've talked about with Facebook in the past and stuff, and especially with them changing long-term services that people really held dear. Google is not the Google it once was. In some cases, like the password check and stuff, they've partnered with third party to make sure there's a third-party independent verification that they do not see the passwords. They do not see the usernames at all. They cannot track it. They just can track that if it was already hacked or not. So they've been doing a few things like this. The Android stuff is kind of built into the phone where it's already stored. I mean, if you type stuff into Chrome and you're having Chrome save stuff, it's saving a lot of that stuff anyway, but it's local to the phone. You know, you do have to look carefully at any of these services and make sure they are secure in of themselves. So
okay. Well, we have an email question from Carol, and she asks, I would like to retire an old laptop and move the 2010 office suite to our newer but middle-aged Windows 10 laptop. The newer laptop has Office 365, but I don't like the yearly subscription fee. Is it dumb to put the older Office suite on a newer laptop? Asks Carol. Says, any tips? I don't think that's dumb, is it?
Well, Microsoft has been changing their licensing here recently on a lot of stuff. It depending on how that was bought and under that stuff, it may now actually not be allowed anymore. Microsoft is pushing everything to Office 365, and they really don't want those old versions out there. And they're actually even getting rid of some of their programs where employees could run a version at home, an older version or a local version, if they had in the office. They just actually canceled that like 2 weeks ago, where that's no longer allowed. So do be a little bit careful. You do probably want to check in with your licensee. If you bought it from a store, as shrink wrap, you're probably pretty good. Otherwise, just be a little bit careful because Microsoft is kind of clamping down on that. And their goal is to get everyone to Office 365. So that's the only thing that's really going to be there going forward, too, if you need to keep compatibility with other users and stuff.
Yeah, I agree. If you've got the CD and you bought it from a retail store, like a Best Buy or a Office Max or something like that, you probably have no problems at all. There is some licensing restrictions that if you bought that with your, for instance, if it's a Dell laptop, if you and it came with the Dell, it's stuck with that Dell. So to answer your question, no, it's not dumb to go back to Office 2010. If you're happy with that, there's a lot of people who didn't like the move to the new ribbon that goes across the top and the later versions of Office. A lot of people who are adverse to having that recurring fee, whether it's monthly or yearly. I would say the benefits of that is that with the recurring fee is that you'll never be out of date again, that you'll always have the latest and greatest version, and if you've purchased the right version, which I'm not even sure if there's a wrong version in this case, you can install it in up to five different machines, right? So you can buy one copy of Office that you're paying that yearly fee for and install it on five different systems. They're assuming that you've got two laptops and a desktop and maybe a version for your tablet or your phone or something like that. That's what it's intended for.
And one thing just to remember about older versions is anything older than Office 365 will go off support and stop getting security patches.
Yeah.
And there are, just like in the OS, lots of security patches for Office, especially Word and Excel, because there's a lot of people that, especially phishing kind of stuff, attack Word users with attachments and stuff. So it's a humongous security risk once those go off. And I think Office 2010 goes off with Windows 7, which is in January of this year. Don't quote me on that. I have to recheck it. But those security patches will stop coming sooner or later.
January next year, Joe?
January of 2020. Yeah, next year, 2020.
2020, yeah, okay. You know, I was just, you know, that's a good point. I appreciate you saying that because I was thinking, well, what's wrong with running an older version? If it fires up and runs, it's not, technically the machine's not going to have any problem running it.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I? And then bam, I just got harpooned.
You just have a, you know, there's just some security concerns. Some people might be able to get away with that if you're super diligent about the type of applications that you open and the attachments that you receive. But there are some very compelling reasons to keep that Office installation up to date. And it is frustrating for everybody that you no longer can have a buy once, keep it forever kind of motto.
Right.
But that doesn't go over so well with Wall Street anymore. So everybody's having the recurring.
This is not for everyone. But personally, I at home moved off Office. I don't use Office. I either use Google Docs or I use OpenOffice, which has much more of the older feel of Office, instead of the ribbons and stuff like that. And I kind of grew up, you know, I'm an old fogey now, so I'm used to the older versions of Office too, and I don't necessarily like the newer versions of Office. Much harder to find stuff. So I've kind of transitioned, at least at home where I can, off of Office entirely.
Great point. Carol can check that out. Thank you, Jeff. That is all the time we have on today's show. I want to thank my panelists and remind you SDPB is always there for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Have a great weekend.